My name is Tom Jolly. I've obviously had a lot of games manufactured over the years. This shows up in the little blurb they did in the Con magazine. So, yeah, Wiz War and Draken and Cave Troll and a bunch of others. And I actually wrote most of these notes up on a blog entry on how to approach a manufacturer with your game. That's on the website leagueofgentlemen.com, along with a lot of other leagueofgamemakers.com. I told you I was tired. So yeah, the comic book, I think. Approaching a manufacturer, generally the way I go about it personally is I go to conventions with a really well, you know, play-tested prototype. But, you know, a lot of people say, well, I've got this idea, you know, I want to sell it to the game company, and that, of course, never happens. But ideas are obviously a dime a dozen, and apparently so are well-thought-out game designs. I mean, there's a lot of game designs out there. So if you really want to try to present yourself well at a convention, you have a really well-tested prototype, preferably, hopefully it'll look fairly nice, too. A lot of people say that's not a requirement. You know, a game prototype is just to test the mechanics. But it's often nice to encourage the manufacturer to have a kind of a visual idea of what the manufactured item is going to look like. So you can say, oh yeah, this is going to look great, you know. One of the prototypes I presented at Gen Con 2 weeks ago, I had drawn up all these little cute robot figures and did all the graphics on it, and the guy looked at it and he had an immediate idea how it would look like on his, you know, demo table, and he said, oh yeah, this will attract a lot of attention, people just walking by and seeing this. Mm-hmm. So presentation is important. When you approach a manufacturer at a convention, this is my favorite way to do it, is going to a convention to present it to them rather than trying to do it by mail or email. Because then you can, of course, you know, have the physical prototype you can try to pitch to him. And it is like a little sales pitch that you're trying to do with the manufacturers. I normally go up to the booth, find out who is in charge of, you know, looking at games. And it isn't always the CEO. It's, you know, someone may have a guy just to look at design submissions and try to make an appointment for some time after the dealer room is closed, so you can demo it for them. And often they'll give you like a 5-minute slot or a 15-minute slot, and you make your appointment, sit down with them, give them a really brief overview of your game, and if they ask for it, you can sit there and start playing it. And that's, it's gone both ways for me. I've given people a 5-minute review of the game, and they say, well, you know, we'd like to take that with us, or we'd like you to submit it, or hey, let's sit down and play it because we have an hour to spend. So, yeah, it just varies upon the situation. You got to kind of roll with the way it goes. I tend to, you know, not ask about money at that time. Usually, if they get a game, they're going to spend, you know, many, many hours, you know, probably a couple of hundred man hours testing it themselves. And then if they're interested in it, they'll start off, you know, negotiating a contract with you. And contract negotiation is a whole other another spiel. And that's, I actually wrote an article, same website, about the ins and outs of contract negotiations with game companies. There's quite a lot to it. But usually they'll offer you an advance, which you get to keep if they decide not to print it. And some royalty. I usually expect around 6 or 7% royalty versus the wholesale cost. So, but like I say, that's another talk. So that's the general way I go about presenting games to game companies. You can go the email route, but it's usually best if you already have a well-known name in the industry. I can get away with that. I say, oh yeah, Tom Jolly, we've dealt with him before. Somebody who's never been in the industry, you know, it's very hard to send somebody an email with a description of the game. And a lot of people are really reluctant to submit a description of the game because they don't want to, you know, give away all the secrets of their game. You know, what if somebody steals it? Which is yet another article. but being concerned about having your game stolen. But so, yeah, and if you tried to go with an email route, you'd want to give at least a substantial enough description of the game that the company has a good idea what the game is about. It's what's special about it. Just like pitching a story in fiction, which I think is the next talk by Frank. But you have to have a pitch worked out. You have to have something that will sell them on it. And there's something called a sales sheet, which you can create, which gives the basic fundamental things about your game, what the good things to pitch about it, what components it has. If it has a special mechanic, you know, you go into that. What makes your game special over somebody else's? Those are all things worth pitching while you're trying to sell your game. That is the bulk of it. There were some, you know, do's and don'ts. You don't tell them how great your game is, because they'll figure that out when they play it. You know, that's just, you know, bragging. And then you say, oh, all my relatives love the game. That's totally irrelevant information to them. Because the relatives are notoriously bad about giving you accurate opinions about your game, which is why they have the Protospiel here, where all the playtesters all the designers playtest each other's games, and they give each other brutally honest comments. So, if you can get into a group like that where you have other designers, and you're all testing each other's games, and it works out really well. I always talk about not bringing up money, and there's a non-disclosure agreement, which some companies ask you for if they're showing you a game. If you show a company a game and you're a newbie in the industry, it's generally not a good idea to start going into, I want you to sign a non-disclosure agreement so you don't tell anybody about my game. And they're going to go, oh, this guy's a real pain to deal with. You know, I don't know if we want to, you know, even look at his game, because he's going to sue us in case we use his theme. And of course, you know, the same theme is used in 100 different games, but there are some people who are very, quite certain their idea is, you know, absolutely unique and is going to change the industry. Yeah, the latest version of chess, you know. Wow, I've redesigned checkers and it's a lot of fun now. You know, okay, that's nice. But yeah, let's see. Yeah, and I say act professional. You know, a lot of people will actually send stuff in. They won't punctuate properly. They will have just bad spelling, and you go, why are you even sending this? You know, start all their, you know, sentences with small letters and little bizarre stuff like that. And I don't know if they're trying to make an impression. Well, they do make an impression. It's just not a very good impression. So I think, yeah, especially if you're a new person who's trying to deal with the company for the first time, yeah, try to act as professional as you can when you're submitting the stuff. And some of them want a return box also when you send them a game. So if you want your prototype back, I've lost a couple of prototypes just because the company has said, well, you didn't send us a return box. I'm like, well, what? You guys asked for the game to look at it. You know, why would I need to do that? But that's, you know, some companies have that policy, some don't. So it's kind of a coin toss. Yeah. And you don't want to obviously bug people at conventions at bad times. And if you're there on, you know, Saturday morning when 100,000 people just walked into the convention center, you're not really going to try to push your way up in front of the booth. Hey, can you look at this, you know, prototype? It's going to come back later. But so, hitting them up at the right time, being prepared to do a demo if you have the chance to demo it for them. And that is the bulk of it. Maybe getting an idea of what kind of terms they want to offer you. So that's most of everything I had to say. Was there any details you'd like fleshed out? Or
you said approach them once you have a really well thought out, well designed prototype that's been
play-tested considerably.
Play-tested a lot.
Debugged.
Avenues like with Protospiel here, or Celestospiel here, and other like gaming contests for new designs. Are those a good way?
Yeah, gaming tongue. Yeah, some gaming
like
contests.
Like for board design games. Yeah. Because I think they had one at KublaCon.
Yeah, and I think they have. They do
have
those
one at
Gen Con
too, I think.
Yeah, and they do those at PolyCon also down in San Luis Obispo. So those are good routes to. I guess they, on the contests, do they really give you much input on
redesign? I'm not
redesigning?
Sure, but I would think that if you approach someone like one.
Yeah, and then there are also.
You just add it to your, this has been well.
There are places that will, like, some game companies, ask you specifically. If you've had it blind play tested, if you've sent it to somebody and they had to read through the rules all by themselves and work it out. And then if you can do that, that's a good thing to do. And there are places online, couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but that do will do play testing for money, basically. You pay the group, they play test it and give you results back. And then again, if there are other like design groups that they do all the internal play testing, some of those will swap too and send designs to each other and for blind play testing. So that's a good way to get that done. And what was I just thinking of? It'll come back. So.
Yeah, I had heard or read somewhere, I can't remember where.
Oh, I remember before I forget, since I'm a little brain dead from lack of sleep. The and it was right there. Oh, yeah. Publisher speed dating, if you've ever... We did this at Gen Con a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. They had, three sessions of publisher speed dating. What that is people bring their prototypes in and they sit down, they have a table, and then they have 6 minutes to pitch it to a game company. And so game companies sign up to be involved with this, and then I had showed it to like 20 different game companies, a prototype, in a couple of hours. And haven't received a call from any of them.
But at least you have your pitch down by now, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty easy. And I actually tried to pitch two different games. I said, well, are you interested in this light, Euro-style game, or are you interested in this light war game? And they would gravitate to one or the other, usually, and then I pitched that game. So that worked out nicely for me, and everybody told me that I shouldn't do that. So... but
it seemed to work.
Yeah, it seemed to work. So I had no complaints, and a couple of them asked to see both of them. So,
where did you find?
And actually, I did end up placing one of the games, but it wasn't. It actually wasn't because of the publisher's speed dating. Pardon me.
Where was this at?
At Gen Con.
Gen Con.
I think they do it at some other cons too, but Gen Con. It's I'm not sure how many years they've done it. So this was my first one, as far as I'd seen. Luke Laurie pitched a game there that we had both worked on called Drill Baby Drill, and he got a publisher interested in it, and then we sent it off with him. And like I say, one of the other games I had, I ended up taking to yet another publisher on the convention floor and pitching it to him. And we sat down, and I had like five designs, and I showed him one right after the other, and he said, this looks interesting, this looks interesting, send him in. And so, of course, that was Fantasy Flight Games, and I have a long working history with them. I'll tell you the story, though, of my first encounter with them. It was in Essen, Germany, which is kind of amusing, two Americans meeting in Essen, Germany to sell games to each other. And he had, his company consisted of three people then. This was like around 1997 or 98. And I had bag of prototypes with me. And I saw Bruno Fiduti, well-known game designer. He had a little cart full of prototypes he was hauling around to and trying to pitch to people. And I think Alan Moon was doing the same thing about the same time. So all these designers, walking around with these prototypes under their arm, pitching them to the companies. But I met Chris Peterson there. He's CEO of Fantasy Flight Games, and we sat down. And I say, I got a couple of prototypes. He'd never heard me. I'd never heard of him. And he goes, "Yeah, we got 5 minutes." And so instead, I was trying to make an appointment to you know, demo them for him later on, but he just sat me right down there in the booth because he wasn't busy at the time. And I ended up pitching the prototypes for Disc Wars and Draken to him. And was it Draken or Vortex? But at least Disc Wars, anyway. And he ended up picking up both those games ultimately. So there is a lot of success in going this route and making contact with the game companies. And obviously, or it seems to me, there's more game companies and a lot more game designs now than there were 20 years ago. And the game designs tend to be much, much better than they were 20 years ago, in my opinion. Maybe that's just because there's so many of them. Some are bound to float to the top. But there were some good game designs back then, too. So just not as many of them as there are now. And, of course, you have Kickstarter now. So you can always bypass the publisher route, kickstart something, and if it's really popular, a company will pick it up that way. Mm-hmm. And yet another way to deal with that is that my first game, I published myself. This was before Kickstarter and before everybody was doing everything in China. And I printed about 2,000 copies of myself. It became popular enough that Chessex picked it up at that point. And they came to me and said, yeah, we'd like to, you know, be printing your game. So that was a kind of a, you know, back way of doing it. But a lot of people have done that, where they bring out their first game, and then it becomes a little bit popular, and somebody else will pick it up, and then their name is in the industry. And once your name is, you know, in everybody's mind, or at least in enough minds that you have some inroads to the manufacturers, the path becomes much easier.
When you published your own game first, did you take it to different places like Game Castle, or, I mean, how did you sell it?
Well, that's funny. That was Wiz War in 1985, and I actually submitted it to 5 different game companies and had it rejected by all of them.
Including, did you say Wiz Wars?
Yeah, Wiz War. Steve Jackson Games, Midkemia Press, which doesn't exist anymore, Eon, which printed Cosmic Encounters, and they're not around anymore. And although their game is. Anyway, yeah, I sent it around to a number of companies, and I'd get it back, you know, they'd make some comments about it, and then I'd change the game and improve it. So the first version of Wiz War I submitted was quite a bit different from the one that I actually ended up publishing myself. So
you just took it to different, I mean, how did you sell it or give it
away? I actually bought tables at conventions or piggybacked on other people's tables. I'd take a, you know, box of the, say, 2 dozen Wiz Wars to a convention and find somebody to buddy up with on a table they'd already bought, or buy my own table, and sit there and sell it. And people were noticing that I was selling a couple of dozen copies every convention. Even at, I mean, the people I buddied up with were making more money off my game than they were off their own. So, so they were saying, "Yeah, this is a nice way to go." And people started noticing that, and that's why it ended up getting picked up eventually. So, any other questions?
We came in 10 minutes late, so we're not sure what you're covering in the beginning.
Oh well, I was talking about the how to approach a game manufacturer. How to present your game at a convention to a game manufacturer and arrange an appointment with them when the dealer room closes to demo your game, basically. That was the fundamental gist of how to present your game. I personally think it's been the most effective route is hitting up the game manufacturers and either giving them a little sales pitch or demoing it for them when the dealer room closes.
So. Are you seeing a lot of manufacturers still at these cons? I mean, I've seen a lot of distributors, but not a lot of manufacturers.
You generally see them at the bigger cons. I mean, I tend to, the cons that I usually go to pitch the games are either like Gen Con, Origins, or the Gamma Trade Show, the International Toy Show in New York is supposed to be good for that, but I've never ever been there, so I can't really say. The Chicago, called Chi-Tag, I'm trying to remember, oh, Chicago Toy and Game Show is supposed to be good for that. It's, I think, also fairly expensive, but they have a lot of a high, the big name buyers. You know, they have, if you have a game, you know, they have like the Toys R Us and Walmart's there, and then if you want to pitch a game, they have outfits like Ideal and. I think they're all the same company now, aren't they? Ideal, Parker Brothers, and Mattel, is that all one giant entity? And I'm not sure. They seem to merge every few years. But so they have a lot of big names at that convention, but it's also pricey.
Did you say that Wiz Wars you ended up self-publishing?
Originally, yeah. I had the first three editions, a total of about 2,000 copies. And first edition was, you know, it was a little Ziploc baggie, and there was 100 copies of that. And then I went to a box because, of course, stores don't want to carry Ziploc baggies. So, and it did pretty well. Nowadays, the game probably never would have, you know, if I had tried to do exactly the same thing now, it wouldn't work. The quality of games is so much higher than it was back then, and the expectations are so much higher now than they were back then. I mean, there were a lot of Ziploc games back when I was a
What if you go, let's say you go with Kickstarter and you get, you know, an interest, people are showing up, enough where you're able to start, you know, printing up your own game to ship out to people, and suddenly you have an interest of trying to get through distributors. Is there a way of doing something like that?
Sure. You just contact distributors and ask them to carry your game.
Is there a list or a website that has the game distributors type of things? You just have to kind of hunt them back and track them down the hard way.
I think on my... I have links to some of those lists on my website. It's, if you want to know it, www.silcom.com/TildeTomJolly /
This is old school, all right.
Oh, yeah. And then design .htm. Or you
Business
can...
Card?
Yeah, I don't have one with me today, unfortunately. Or you go to www.jollygames.com and search around until you find the right page, which also works. I think there's a listing down there that says making and manufacturing your own game, or marketing and manufacturing, something like that. So it's fairly easy to find that way too. So yeah, Google Jolly Games and you'll get there eventually.
So for your boxed edition that you self-published, when you upgraded to the box, you had about 2,000 copies of that, you said?
Yeah, when I upgraded to a hard box.
About
yeah.
Roughly how much did it cost you to produce those 2,000 copies?
Well, that's a really good question. Because I was selling them, I think, back then for about $10 a copy. Oh, so it was obviously a lot less than that.
Okay.
At the time, I was also started distributing them through Berkeley Games. Berkeley Game Distribution. Heck, I can't remember the exact name of it. Berkeley Games, anyway. It was a distribution company. Mm-hmm. And, so that was linked to Chessex. They were both owned by the same person at the time, which is why Chessex ended up buying it, because they could see how much was being distributed and how well it was doing. So, that was 2,000 copies, and they went fairly fast. And then I think the next edition was another 2,000. I don't know what the total is now, so lost track. It's up to its eighth edition now, so pleased to say.
What are your thoughts on print-to-play industry?
I don't have a whole lot of, people publishing with PDFs. Mm-hmm. I don't really know anything about that part of the industry, whether people are making any money off of it or not. I haven't dabbled with it at all. I haven't really talked to people who have, so mm-hmm. I just don't know.
How about the aspect of, are any of your games, have they developed like communities around them and that you keep up with and interact with? Or
not so much. Wiz War, when it came quite a few years after it came out, somebody launched a web page that I had essentially nothing to do with, you know, WizWar.com, and it's still out there. And you know, I think it only covers up to the fifth edition, the little brown box. But yeah, and I was a little surprised with that. It was just a fan-based web page. So as far as the community goes, but other games, I haven't really tried to go out and except, you know, responding to questions on Board Game Geek about certain games. It seems like people are always surprised when, you know, the game designer actually starts answering questions. I said, well, aren't they supposed to? But I guess that's not always the case.
So I apologize, I don't know your portfolio, but is a lot of your stuff like Euro, lighter?
No, actually very little of my stuff is a Euro-oriented.
Okay.
I like to do Euro games because those seem to be where some of the biggest sales are. But, yeah, it's WizWar, Draken, Cave Troll, Disc Wars, Vortex. I was just co-designing on those. There was a Wingnut Games, did Cargo and Camelot, which has... Yes, it looks just like that.
I think I might still have the other one too that you just mentioned.
Camelot. Yeah, which has nothing to do with Shadows. What was it called?
Shadows
over
Camelot?
Yeah, it has nothing to do with that one. I mean, wish it did, because that made a lot more money.
Have you done much in the way of war games?
No. Although I did pitch a really light war game at Gen Con this last last one. I'm hoping that it gets published, but it's like a little one-hour war game. It can barely be called a war game in the conventional sense of a war game.
Is there any company that's more open to, I guess, checking out new games from people that are not known? Let's say, you know, oh, you're a new person.
Well, I think
here's
that's
this company. They're really good. They really like working with the new people.
That's one of the nice things about, well, a lot of the newer companies. You just have to go ask them. I mean, there's a lot of companies out there, and some of them say, no, we only do in-house design, and other companies will look at all sorts of designs. You can, if you do something like the speed, you know, manufacturer speed dating, you know, all those companies are looking for games that are there, and there was 20 companies there. So you write down some of the names, you know, contact those people, or find out who was involved with the speed dating, and you'd get a good idea of, you know, who's looking for games, and you look at what they published, you know, try to figure out what it is they're looking for. But a lot of the medium-sized companies seem to like not Mattel and not, you know, the humongous monsters in the industry. Yeah, the medium-sized companies seem to generally be open for new ideas as long as they're presented professionally and, you know, have been well play-tested.
What would you think of as well play-tested? Just massive amounts of play-testing?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you can play your game a dozen times without getting bored by it, that's always the first criteria. I've had games where I said, well, gosh, this works great mechanically, but I don't really want to play it again, which is a good sign that nobody else is going to want to either. So if you can really play test a game, I mean, you're never 100% sure that you've gotten all the bugs out of a game, but the more you play test a game, especially ones with highly interactive components, like your cards that interact, and you're not really going to go through and check all, you know, 5 million combinations over a period of time, but you can get a pretty good idea. You know, most of the time things are going to be all right. If you can't sit there and mathematically analyze it perfectly, so more play testing never hurts. And it's good to get all the bugs out before you show it to a manufacturer, because sure as heck, the first time they play it, you know, some weird little thing's going to pop up. So.
What about graphics and art?
On your prototype?
Yep.
it's good to have it look nice. I had mentioned that earlier. If you have a good visual idea of what you expect the manufactured game to look like, and it is a nice presentation, then the manufacturer will also have that idea. I mean, art obviously does contribute to the quality of play a lot of times. A good, well, I was just playing Splendor the other day, which is basically, you know, a little mathematical exercise, but it has all these lovely little cards with these jewels on them, and you go, oh, this is a really pretty game, you know, it has a nice visual aspect, and it's enjoyable. The play of the game is enhanced because of that. They could have just, you know, had little blocks of color and, you know, point values on each card, but they didn't. They had this very lovely layout with, you know, it was essentially a theme that was slapped onto the top of a fairly good mechanic, but added a lot of appeal to the game. So if you can present the game in such a way to a manufacturer that he perceives the visual element of attraction to the game, then that's certainly important. So I wouldn't go out and spend a lot of money on it. I mean, my prototypes, they tend to maybe they're fairly simple, but they're fairly, you know, colorful too. If I need to draw silly cartoons for them to make them more appealing, then I'll do that. But you know, that's down on the level of my old WizWar artwork, so which hasn't really gotten any better.
For the prototype, all the artwork, I'm assuming that needs to be fully original, right?
No, not on a prototype. You can cut and paste artwork from the internet. I mean, you're not using it for sale, so it's not
fair
like
use.
Yeah, fair use. So you're using it once, and then it's pretty much going to get thrown away. You're not selling to anybody. You're not publishing it. So yeah, I commonly take whatever art's available for my prototypes, and of course the publisher never uses that, but it's just so I can give them a good representation of what it could look like when it was published.
And Tom, does it help to do sort of three-dimensional figures as opposed to little chits representing?
I guess it wouldn't hurt. I don't do that myself. I mean, you can spend a lot of money on being really fancy, and I've seen some absolutely gorgeous prototypes where people have spent a lot of money making it, and I've even heard people hiring professional artists to, you know, do the art for their prototype, and that's just, you know, going overboard because, you know, unless you're getting ready to, you know, go out and kickstart it yourself, that's just, you know, money you're throwing away, in my opinion. So there's kind of an intermediate, you know, level. So you don't want to just have white cards with hand scribbled text on them, but you don't. Although some of my early prototypes look like that, I mean, that's great for playtesting it with your friends. But you know, as soon as you start playtesting it with any kind of an audience, even at a convention, yeah, you want it to have a little bit of a visual pop to it.
How many games, like prototypes, do you develop per, say, one that gets interest?
It's probably 5 to 1, somewhere in there. I have a lot of shelved prototypes at home. And it's really a shame because I'll get an idea and I say, this is going to be great. You know, in my head, the idea is just really great. And I'll spend 2 weeks working on graphics for it and making it look nice. And then cut out all the pieces, sit down. And the first thing I do when I play test is play test it by myself, because I don't want to, you know, inflict the pain of the first run on everyone. And it's astounding how many flaws you can find in a game just by, you know, setting out three sets of play tokens and saying, okay, he does this, he does this, and going through it yourself. And, 2 weeks of artwork and making it look nice, and then finding out that it fails miserably as a game is just kind of disappointing sometimes.
I imagine you have some gems that you wish, you know, somebody would...
Oh, yeah. Like I say, the industry has changed so much in 20 years. Things that were I have some really, some fairly simple games, but you know, they're, and they play really well. But I, you know, come to a convention like this and I go, well, there's nothing that really, sure they work, and sure they're fun to play, but they don't really stand out amongst all these other games. You know, there's nothing really magical about them. So,
is that a theme issue? I mean, if you change the theme with some of them?
No, some of them, I'm still trying to market around, so. And there are times when I look at a game and go, yes, it works, but it really needs a new theme.
Yeah.
And retheming a game is an interesting subject, too. If a game doesn't do what you want it to, just slapping a new theme on it can rejuvenate it quite a bit. I mean, if you say, I have this board game with a Renaissance combat, mm-hmm. or Renaissance, Renaissance anything, really. If you can put a new theme on that, because there's so many games that, Renaissance lifestyles, marketing, combat, there's just all sorts of stuff out there with that same theme. And then you run across some really bizarre theme that says, oh yeah, that's quite appealing because it's so different. Well, let's say, bean farmers, now there's an idea. Who would have thought that Bonanza would be a successful game?
How many games a year do you come up with? Like ideas that you say take through at least initial stages of prototypes?
Oh, probably about 3, I'd say. Yeah, I've got a couple of ideas that I'm really excited about right now. I'll go home and sign right away.
What's your income?
I'm retired. Oh, just on games?
Yeah, just on games.
It probably averages out to about $10,000 a year.
Yeah.
Over the over many years, it's fluctuated. Yeah, quite a bit above that and quite a bit below that. So, but that's probably a decent average. So it's not something I could make a living off of. Now, clearly, there are game designers who are making a living off of it, like Garfield and Knizia. And I'm sure. And the guy whose name I can't pronounce that did Dominion, of course.
So how often do you team up with someone else when you're doing your games or working on for the creation of the game?
You mean? Luke Laurie was the first one I worked with on a game design, and. Truth be, it's probably 90% or more his design, and I got brought into it. I should say I really enjoy the game, and so it's one of the best games I've played in a long time.
But I mean, is it common?
Joel David Drew.
Yes.
Is it common for game designers to team up on the creation of the games, or
it is.
Designers are just solo, and then you might.
Oh no, there's a like if you look at Fiduti's games, half of them have somebody else's name on the box with them, like Bruno Cathala. You check out a lot of the games when you pick them up, and there's quite often a couple of designers on there. So that's not uncommon, and it does add quite a lot. I mean, it's the synergy between two designers versus one. I've often been surprised how much a new mind, who's looking at the design in a slightly different way, can bring to the design of the game. When I first submitted Lightspeed to Cheap Ass Games, that was a turn-based game, and James Ernest said, this would make a great real-time game. I looked at it and I go, that's an excellent idea. And so we became co-designers on the game, and the game did, for a $5 game, it did pretty well. And I still really like that design for a real-time card game. So, any other questions? Or is everybody seated?
Sounds like it helps to have lots and lots of friends who are willing to play your game lots and lots of times.
Yeah. Well, that's actually another funny story. Well, not that funny, but I used to have a circle of gaming friends, and they all moved away, and now I know why. most of us just drifted apart, you know. We were all close gaming buddies when we were with the gaming club at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and then over the years, you know, people, you know, got jobs, married, moved away, whatever. And so now I have a totally new group of friends, but they're all game designers. And so now we get together and we sit and we play, you know, three different prototypes. And I couldn't do that with my old game group. You know, I'd be lucky if I could, you know, I'd be all, what's the word? Anyway,
control people into playing.
Yeah, basically, I have to, you know, kind of beg my way into having them play the game. I'll give you free beer.
What do you think about things like using the Roll20 website for trying to play your games with other people to, you know, play test it?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with the website at all.
Oh, okay. It's a tabletop role playing website that basically you can put your maps in, you can put other stuff down there. You can have chat with visual cameras on each other, even if you want. And it has dice rolling. It has, it supports Google+, with regards to Google groups and stuff like that. It's just kind of a way for people to play something like D&D, let's say, over the computer, so they're not all having to be in front of each other at the table. They can still see each other. Roll dice, move characters, and all that.
Will it work for board games as well as role-playing games?
I'm not sure how far it goes with that. I'm thinking it would, because what it is, if you have icons, digital icons for the board pieces, all the players can move stuff around on the board just as easily.
Well, I still always enjoy the social aspect of having a bunch of people in the same place. Mm-hmm. Drinking beer and making bad jokes together. once you're sitting in front of a computer console doing, even though it's a virtual board game, you're still separated by the other people by however far it is, and it's not substantially different.
The cameras are the same as having them across the table. Believe me, I know.
So you're happy with doing it that way?
I only choose to do that because some of the people I play with are just too far away.
Yeah,
getting together.
Yeah, I can understand
that.
Yeah. Well, if you're close with a particular group and you don't want it to break up, I could see that. But then again, now you're sitting in front of a. If you're playing a board game, you're sitting in a chair in front of a computer for, you know, a few hours once again, and it's
same thing. But yeah, like one of the gamers I play with, I met him through someone else, and he's in Japan, you know, so we play, and, you know, he logs on to play with us once in a period.
That's neat. But I haven't tried that yet.
Yeah.
I don't know the name of it, but my friends have told me about a different website that's just for board games, and I imagine that it would be possible to do.
Like BoardGameGeek.com or something?
Well, not that one, but...
This press filled out.
Say that again?
Brett Spielfeld.
That doesn't sound like the same one, but something, I don't know.
On tabletop games or something like that. On the other hand, it would reduce CO2 emissions by not having people all drive to your house. So,
yes.
That can't be bad.
True.
Well, I guess the reason I was wondering is, when you're creating your game, how do you protect it from,
Oh yeah, the whole legal aspect. That's a whole.
I mean, let's say you do have a good game, you got a good idea.
Different subject.
And your idea uses grapes, and then someone goes, "Oh, that would work better with beans." And what do you do to have you protect?
Between copyright and trademark and patents, there really is no way to protect your game. And that's, you're going to hear that a lot. The best way to protect a game idea is to be first to market with it and have it do well. Like Dominion, obviously, there's been how many copies of that same mechanic have come out? And, that particular mechanic has a high dollar value associated with it because it's made a lot of people a heck of a lot of money. And yet, obviously they have no legal recourse to go after these other companies. So
Dominion, capture the market is about the closest you're going to get.
Yeah, pretty much. It's really a shame because I really think that it would be nice to have some sort of protection in there, but it would also, in some ways, hurt the industry because games build on other people's mechanics. You know, the fact that they have a deck building mechanic in a lot of games that have incorporated yet other mechanics has created some new and unique games. And if you all of a sudden say, well, this guy patented this mechanic, you know, nobody else can use it, it would hurt the ability for other designers to build the next generation game. And in fact, you know, you think about it, the deck building game is really based on Magic the Gathering ultimately.
Yeah.
And I heard a little story, in fact, the guy who was working on Magic the Gathering, the Donald guy that made that game, had derived that when he was playtesting some portion of that. I just heard that story today, so it's probably just a rumor and I'm spreading around. But and then of course Magic the Gathering, you know, Garfield credits WizWar and Cosmic Encounters as his influences.
Oh, yeah.
And this was an old issue of Duelist about 20 some odd years ago. It was less than 20 years ago. Magic hasn't been around that long. When did Magic come out?
Early
98?
Early
90s.
Early
90s. 92. Was it early 90s or late 90s?
Early 90s.
I can't remember.
Okay, well.
Magic the Gathering, what do you recall?
92,
93.
I think 92.
Because 95 Fallen Empires came out. 95, that's what I got.
Okay. So, anyway, the point being that, Magic was built, was partly based on those. I mean, a wizard gets 7 cards, you know, that's WizWar, and bang, all of a sudden, here it is in the same, well, not the same game, because they obviously made a lot of changes, like making it collectible. If I thought, come up with that idea myself, I'd be a very happy man right now. Obviously that was a brilliant idea, having a collectible card game and having, you know, the 5 schools of magic, 5 colors of magic. So just genius. And then that, you know, caused the deck building. And before that, WizWar was based on the fact that I had played Cosmic Encounters and Dungeons and Dragons. So it had its foundations to build on. So all these are ideas that, you know, have Dominion wouldn't exist if all this other stuff before it.
Right. Well, yeah, but at the same time, the card game, collectible card game, you know, if the owners had somehow, you know, got control over that variable, you know.
Well, actually, Wizards of the Coast did patent that, ultimately. Did patent the, you know, tapping the cards and many of the aspects about it. So
people get around it, though. And
yeah,
I'm pretty sure
they do
they're not
run
all
it.
Paying Wizards of the Coast for those mechanics.
True.
I mean, turn the card, come on, patent.
Yeah. But the original question, how do you protect a game like copyright, trademark, and patents are extremely painful because they're really expensive, and very few games make enough money to pay for any patent you would get for them, unless they're, you know, extremely successful. Like Dominion was, or Carcassonne, or any of the, or Settlers of Catan. Of course, there's nothing to really patent on that. There was not really a unique mechanic in there to speak of. So patents, in my opinion, are generally a waste of money. I mean, you can spend thousands on a patent. Trademark, not so important unless you really want to protect the name of something. And then that name normally just applies towards the category of thing you're using it on. Say if you name a sandwich, well, I wouldn't name a sandwich WizWar. That would just be a poorly selling sandwich. But so if you trademark it, and somebody trademarks something like that, and it shouldn't have any effect on my trademark on a game or a storefront or a car or whatever. So trademark's not really a protection for a game except It's just the name of the game. Copyright, all that does is protect the exact text. Somebody could take your game rules, retype them up in their own words, and you wouldn't be able to do anything with copyright. There's very little protection for games. And as I said before, if there was, it might create more problems than it solves. So yeah, I think it would hurt.
There's a different direction on it. How free Libre open source software has done so well, that's brought on into gaming some of that idea too. And that, for instance, the open gaming license that Wizards of the Coast. Ended up doing, built a whole platform that actually did pretty well for them. I'm not sure why they pulled back on that, but that could be a different direction where you can still make money off of it, even if you're not like, ooh, this is mine, nobody else can have it, and actually promote and progress the industry at the same time.
It's a good marketing to release it and then pull it back, because bad publicity sometimes is just as good as good publicity. Because then you release it, you pull it back, everybody's complaining, then you re-release it again, and you're re-stimulating them.
Well, I mean, they pulled back from that strategy, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But they were very successful with D&D 3.0 and 3.5.
So
what do you, before we, I want to comment on that. Thoughts?
Treating open as an open gaming license or open, is that what you said? That makes sense. I mean, in a way, we're already doing that, but without any discrete acknowledgement of the fact.
Yeah.
So people are already using everyone else's ideas and melding them to create new games.
Maybe you can make some money off of it, like Wizards of the Coast did with the open gaming license.
What is it they were licensing exactly?
They were licensing the whole system, right?
The D20, was that the D20
system?
Yeah,
the D20 is what they released.
Yeah, but that, yeah, and that was a coherent system where people could build a game based on that. So I guess if you had a game structure such that other people could create modules for it,
yeah,
like expansion sets, I mean, certainly you could do something like
maybe
that.
It was basically based on, as far as I thought, it was based on the idea you can make expansions on it or materials that mm-hmm. that use the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so you didn't have to, if you wanted to make a module for D&D per se, mm-hmm. before you had to sell it through.
I wonder if there would have been a way to
actually, I mean, that's not a bad idea. I think I'll steal that idea. In fact,
please do.
Please steal this idea.
Here's this great game you want to make expansions for.
Think of it. Say something. You do something like Wiz War, similar to that. And you just come along and say, well, anybody, or if Wizards of the Coast did it with Magic, can you imagine if they posted the rules to it and say, well, we're going to keep publishing all these expansion sets, but anybody else can too. Mm-hmm. I mean, oh, good grief.
Just make sure you give us 5% of your proceeds.
That would probably work just fine. And they could reach a point where they don't have to manufacture anything and just sit there and collect, the 5%.
Because your following is going to be making all the expansions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, residual income.
So it's not a bad business model. I mean, somebody ought to do exactly that.
How prevalent is it that a person's game idea, let's say you have a good game idea, you present it out there, you go out there and show it, and 2 years later you see someone else publish?
It's never happened to me.
It's not?
No. And most of the people... in most cases, just not worth it to the game company to mess with you, because if they get a bad reputation, and they will, because everybody knows everyone else in this industry, once they get a reputation for doing something like that, they'll never see another submission again.
So basically, if you show your game to con, and then 2 years later, a game goes out just like the one you have, but it's not yours, people are going to go, hey, I remember when so-and-so showed it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting, because that's different than some other industries, like the music industry, for instance.
Also, the invention industry. You have all these companies, these TV shows, people showing their inventions. Now your invention sucks. 2 years later, someone comes out with it. It's not that person that showed it on TV. So I was curious about it. Designers have more power in this industry. That's where
patents come in handy for things like inventions. I mean, where there's some unique technical application. There's a with games. I mean,
it's too easy to make something. It's
very easy to make a game. And coming up with a mechanic isn't like inventing something based on physics principles.
Yeah.
It's you're just coming up with a bunch of rules, and obviously there's a lot of game inventors out there. Everybody wants to invent a game for it to be unique enough that it catches the public imagination and does well is pretty rare. And there's obviously a lot of games out there who've, you know, sold hundreds of copies and then have never been seen again, including a few of my own. So where were we?
Stealing games.
I was saying,
I did actually write an article on the potential of, you know, Those Bastards Stole My Game was the name of the article. and I think that was also on this League of Game Makers website. And it was basically a rehash of a similarly named article I did for the Games Journal about 20 years ago. But the whole idea was, I'd seen a lot of instances where people had done the same design individually and come out with it about same time, just because that's what the industry was thinking about at the time.
Yes.
I saw two companies within months of each other come out with collectible dice games. This was right after the wave of collectible card games.
Yeah.
Natural evolution. You expect a collectible dice game to come out. And so Gamesmiths did it, and TSR did it. And, of course, Gamesmiths was a very small company without a big budget, and TSR just kind of came in and completely dominated that, which is unfortunate for Gamesmiths. And then I had a game called, Knots, which was a little tile-laying game with little ropes on it. And shortly before, I did all the artwork with all these little ropes on the tiles and had it all laid out, and I, you know, printed it all up. And then just before I released it, Rubik's Tangle came out, which had all these little tiles with little ropes drawn on them. And it looked like somebody had looked over my shoulder and copied the artwork I had. I had done it all myself by hand. And here's something that looks like a clone of what I had done. But what theirs was a puzzle. And what mine was a board game. So they were two totally different entities that had this parallel thing going on, even though, you know, I had certainly never submitted it to them or shown it to them, and they had certainly never done that with me either. So, and then not that long ago, Atsuro came out, which is essentially a board that looks nearly identical to mine, except they've a few of the pieces are different, but the pads on the tiles are essentially the same, and they have pawns moving around on the board. It looks like somebody took a photograph of mine and said, let's change the graphics just a little bit and add these pawns to it. And that was it. But I'd be willing to bet that the guy who designed Tsuro never saw Knots. It just wouldn't surprise me at all. So I think there's a lot of coincidences that occur in the industry of parallel designs happening, coming out at the same time. Well, same thing with the Robo Rally. Robo Tanks came out about the same time. They were both in, once again, this was Gamesmiths. The guy got a double whammy. It was a rough time for the guy. He had a programmed movement using a row of cards, and so did Robo Rally, of course. And, Robo Rally had, once again, a lot more money behind it, and it did quite well. So, but then there was, and I don't know why there was a parallel evolution. I was exposed to both of these people's designs before they came out, and I knew they weren't talking to each other. So it was just peculiar. And so the instances where it looks like somebody's stolen somebody else's idea is often not the case. And I know it's happened a few times. I've heard people complain, this guy, I published this game and this guy copied it. And so I've heard people complain about it on occasion, but it's so rare, it's not something I would worry about dealing with a company. Most companies aren't going to take that risk. They either have their own ideas to pursue and are not going to, you know, try copying yours.
It's not worth stealing someone else.
Yes, that's correct. It's usually not financially worthwhile to steal somebody else's idea.
Okay.
In my opinion. Disclaimer. Anything else?
Nothing comes to mind at the moment.
I'm telling you, you're going to be here all weekends if anyone thinks of anything.
I'm leaving Monday morning, but, yeah.
So is today the only day you're doing lecturing, or?
Doing what?
Are you going to be doing a lecture again on Sunday?
No. I'm just running a couple of games tomorrow.
Okay.
But, you know, you want to come over and bend my ear about anything, I'm always happy to sit around and chit-chat. Okay.
Will you be doing Joe Baby Joe this evening?
I will not. Luke might be running that up in the Proto-Spiel area, the Celeste-Spiel. Except I think he already demoed some other game up there. Yeah, I think, I don't know. I don't know whether he's going to run it up there or not. So, but it is a really fun game. One of the few games every time I play it, I get to explore a different kind of strategy, and it's kind of fascinating in that respect. It's not like there's an obvious single strategy to pursue. There's a dozen different vectors you can take and still win the game if you do it well. Mm-hmm. So it's
taking a step back to game distribution, are there companies that would take your game and try to do the distribution for you? Let's say you do Kickstarter, you find, okay, it's doing okay, I'm selling, you know, 1, 2, 300,000, you know, copies, whatever, a year or something. I don't know what is a good
one. I mean, dealing with distributors, usually, depending on what they want, they'll usually tell you what they want from you. And some of them want the sales sheet and ad flyer, promotional materials, but normally, I mean, you're going to be sending them a sample of the game and asking them if they want to carry it. Yeah, different degrees of how to deal with it. I've had a couple of games carried by Alliance, and, you know, I call them up and say, yeah, what do you need from me to carry this game? And they have, you know, people who deal specifically with people who want to sell games through them. But there are literally dozens of distributors.
But there's dozens of distributors, and then you also have international level. What I'm curious about, is there a company, let's say, like, are there people that you can go to and say, you know, you already know who all the distributors are.
Oh, people who will market it, marketing for you, yes, and they'll charge you for that. I couldn't tell you any of the names off the top of my head.
Yeah. Are there companies that are usually specific individuals?
I think DiscoverGames.com, the people there have inroads to that sort of thing. I think if you go to the Chi Tag game convention, the Chicago Toy and Game Convention, they have people there who deal with that sort of thing, you know, marketing your game for you.
So the best place to get in touch would probably be the game conventions.
Kind of along the lines of vanity publishing.
well, yeah, I mean, you know,
which
isn't usually, that true of any Kickstarter project?
Which doesn't come out very well for the authors usually.
For authors, yeah, but I mean, kickstarting projects for games. But is that really different from vanity publishing ultimately?
I would say yes, because you're getting a lot of, if people back your thing, then you're getting a lot of.
What if you write a book and you already, well, here again, a lot of it's based on your reputation. If you're doing a Kickstarter and nobody's heard of you, and you're trying to push it, then that's you could say that's vanity publishing.
Probably not going to succeed.
Right.
Whereas, the vanity publishing thing that I was referring to was you pay them to publish the book, and they will claim sometimes to try to get it out to distributors, but usually that doesn't really happen. They end up pushing it back on you.
Yeah, and then you do all the marketing.
You pay a lot of money and you do all the work.
Yeah, and how is that different from publishing a game on Kickstarter and you doing all the marketing and doing all the work?
Well, the Kickstarter, let's separate the Kickstarter part. Because Kickstarter, where to me that is getting a wide audience.
Right.
Either it succeeds or it fails, but it's getting a wide audience. So that's what I was getting at.
Thank you.
The aspect of going to an entity who claims that they're going to do something for you, but maybe they don't, which is, that's what I was doing.
Well, they're whenever you get into a situation where you're having somebody else do your marketing for you, and you're releasing some of the control on your ability to handle that, and you're trusting them on their reputation, if they have one, to get out and sell it all for you. They're kind of intermediate to entities like, Impressions Advertising, who is like a distributor for distributors. They take a lot of games and then they take cut to sell to distributors, and they package small quantities of everybody's, of small publishers' games and sell to them. So they're actually like handling the marketing and distributing for you, and they put your game, in their little marketing flyer and send it out to all the stores. So they're in part serving the purpose of what you're talking about. But there are obviously marketing people who deal, just with that, but the quality comes with a price. And I haven't dealt with any of the big marketing people who do things like that. Yeah, you could go into the game industry with $1 million in your pocket and say, yeah, I'm printing 20,000 copies of this game, and I'm going to hire this agency to do all the advertising for it, and I'm going to give them $10,000 to start this campaign and whatever. If you have loads and loads of cash, you can go in big and do it big and possibly fail big if your game isn't that good.
Well, and that is the model that I've heard used to be common, that it was a playground for rich people to just, it was a vanity industry, really.
Mm-hmm.
And, for instance, Mayfair supposedly was that way at the beginning.
Oh, interesting.
Moved beyond that now, but...
Yeah, I didn't know that about Mayfair. They put out some pretty nice games, though, so it's hard to imagine that they started that way.
Since Settlers, I think it's been different, but... Yeah. There was a specific person who came in and did things a little differently.
I have pitched to Mayfair, and it was a hard pitch.
Yeah.
And they're very picky about what they want out of a game.
They can be now, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this was over 10 years ago, then possibly 20. Yeah, everything is in terms of decades once you turn 60.
Yeah.
It's kind of strange. But yeah, I remember pitching to them and... How hard it was. So yeah, writing, which Frank Chadwick, I guess, will be picking up in the next talk, is certainly a different beast than game designing. I've managed to sell a couple of stories myself, and it's hard.
Mm.
It's the amount of rejections I get for each sale I make is just astounding. It's much worse than I do in the game market. But then I'm already established in the game market, so it's just like writing. Once you're a well-known author, it's probably quite easy to get published. You can write just about anything. They say, well, his name's attached. It'll sell well. So,
did you, before you had interest on the first game you designed, was that Wiz Wars, or I'm not sure?
First game was Wiz War.
Had you done a lot of games just as you were working and just
I played
creating
a lot of games.
Games.
I mean, I've been playing games since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
I grew up on Payday and Careers and Monopoly and Battle Cry. We used to just sit around and play games continuously. My younger brother and I played all weekend long. And we were game addicts even at that early age.
Just curious, what were you doing? Obviously, you weren't doing that full time. You weren't doing game design full time.
True.
Way back when, what were you doing, if I may ask?
About that time, I was transitioning between an avionics tech job and an electrical tech job at Lockheed Martin.
Wow.
And then a couple of years later, I got an engineering degree and So I've been an engineer for like the last 20, 25 years. So, but that's been interesting. I worked out in Vandenberg Air Force Base on the Titan missile program. So that was pretty exciting. Yeah, you need a real job if you're going to be designing games. Unless you get really really lucky and design the next big winner, you know. And I imagine it's pretty easy to tell when you've designed a winner. I mean, if I had designed, let's say, Dominion, and I had, played it a few times and then found myself playing it 100 times with friends, once you start playing a game 100 times, you're pretty confident you have a winner. When I played Draken, used to be called Primrose Path, and it was like a little Alice in Wonderland feel to it. I'd go out and play it at lunchtime with one of my coworkers at Lockheed, and I must have played that thing at least 300 times before I ever got it published, and I still enjoyed it. And so I go, well, it's a winner if you can play test a game 300 times and you still like playing it.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty, often the way I can rate of whether a game will be successful or not is how many times I am willing to play test it. Okay, is that about, is my time, I think?
Oh, you said that time.
No, I used to, Frank was supposed to start at 7, wasn't he?
7:30.
Oh, that's odd.
Pretty sure that's what Ben says. Yep.
Okay.
If you have a game that generally plays an hour or two to do, and you have to give a pitch in, or they want to play test it at a show, how do you play test a game in a shorter amount of time? Can you just come up with a shorter, besides, I guess you come up with a shorter version of it.
Yeah.
But if the general an hour and you only have 10 minutes
basically
to play,
they want to see the mechanics of how the game works. If you're pitching the mechanics, you pitch the mechanics and ask them if they're interested in looking at it. And give them an idea of maybe what one or two turns would be.
Okay.
And say, this is how a turn works.
Yeah, so you explain that. Set up.
Yeah, here are the basic mechanics. Yeah. These are the highlights that make my game different from everything else and why it's going to do really great on the market. Mm-hmm. And, this is what a turn is like. And you want to, set it up and play a couple of turns. And, it depends on how complex it is. You have, piles and piles of components. You're not going to want to set it up. Or ideally, you could have it, if you have a meeting and you have a place where you can set it up first and then have them come in and say, okay, this is what the game looks like and give a quick rundown. That would work nicely, too, and it's not usually the case. Usually they take you into a little tiny office. Quick, show it to us. We got 5 minutes.
Go.
So.
Okay.
And like I say, got any other questions? That I'm actually likely to know the answer to, I'd be happy to.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Talk about it outside.
You have to digest the information I've learned now. Come up with more questions.
Thank you so much, Tom.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
It doesn't sound like there's more people. Let's see.